Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Taylor's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Welcome aboard. How's everybody doing? Glad to have you along. Another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming at you on this Thursday. Happy to be here again. Coach Griff will be joining us here shortly, and Bob Kravitz as well. Plenty to talk about as usual. If not, we'll make it up. I hope you're doing well as we get closer and closer to the Brickyard happening up in Indianapolis next week. NASCAR will be in here that week. So that also the TBT begins this Saturday. So for those of you that want to get out and see a lot of guys that you haven't seen for quite some time. So we'll talk about that, but we'll be out there this week as well covering that. Recruiting action continues to go along. ESPN thinks that Fernando Mendoza is an X factor for Indiana, but that kind of goes without question, I think. But I think more importantly, the offensive line's an X factor. We already know, or at least I already know that, and most other people, that Fernando Mendoza is a good quarterback. He's shown that. So that's not a question. Will he have the time to throw? Will the holes be open for the running backs to run? It all indicates that that is the case. But that, to me, is a bigger thing. But the fact that Indiana's getting that sort of attention, I guess, is always a good thing, especially after their historic run in the 2024 season. Speaking of which, Coach Griff, joining us now. How are you, sir?
Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
I cannot complain. I appreciate you so much. Again, I've been singing your praises, but thank you again so much for last week. Man, I'm going to have to come in, have you come in and redo our studios here. Boy, that thing is
I still got work. Yeah, sweet. I'm still working on it, but yeah, it's getting there.
Absolutely. Fernando Mendoza, ESPN, thinks that he's one of Indiana's X factors, and there's no doubt that that's the question after throwing for over 3,000 yards last year. And only, here's my thing, only 6 interceptions while getting sacked 41 times. I mention that because I want to know how many hurries did he have? And because if you're getting sacked that much, you're getting pressure. And to have that kind of pressure and only throw 6 interceptions, that's less than what that Curtis worked through last year, I think.
Yeah, he had a lot of hurries and pressures and things of that nature with Cal. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that he'll have to get over, and I'm sure they worked on it extensively in the spring, is hanging in the pocket longer. When you get into that mindset as a quarterback, it just kind of becomes muscle memory because you're getting pressured so much that you bail and don't give your chance to let the pocket set around you. So that will be the biggest thing that he'll have to, get over. And I'm not saying he hasn't already done that, because in spring he seemed to be pretty good about hanging in there. But again, when the bullets start flying in a real game, that's where he'll have to, you know, trust his line, trust his protection. And I don't think there's any question he'll be able to do that. He's so smart as a quarterback, your mindset, what he does off the field in preparation. I have to agree with ESPN. I mean, he is an X factor, just like Curtis Rourke was an X factor. That's the nature of college football today. Your X factor is your quarterback. I mean, how good they are or how bad they are.
But I don't know that anyone really knew that about Curtis Rourke last year, just because he didn't have, you know, he didn't come in from Ohio with the expectations, I think, that Fernando does. And why did he only play in 11 games? That was all he accomplished, that in 11 games, leading Cal to a 6-5 record.
Well, he wasn't the starter early on. I mean, he went into the season as their third string quarterback. And due to injury and poor performances, they finally gave him a shot. And once he had that shot, he never relinquished the opportunity that he was given to be the starter. Now, he may have played in all the games, but he was in a backup role. As far as, you know, last year with Rourke, the only thing is, from my perspective, was that Rourke had the credentialing of coming in as being a former offensive player of the year in the Mid-American Conference. So that's where I was going with that. Now, the expectation that Fernando has over Curtis, I think the reason there is his mobility and his ability to do more outside the pocket, even if Curtis did have a good knee. I mean, he already had that bad knee. So I think Mendoza brings a little bit more mobility to the equation and a lot more versatility at the spot because of what they may be able to do with quarterback runs, bootlegs, nakeds, things of that nature that they weren't able to truly implement last year with Curtis because of that scenario with his knee. So, this kid is going to, you can just read, I guess I should say I'm mumbling here a little bit. You can just read Coach Sig's body language when he talks about Mendoza, and you can get the signal that he thinks he's going to be a special player.
And well,
Sig's been around a lot of them. So, I mean, that's the
point.
He's
excited. I think he's excited. This might be the best known commodity that he has at quarterback going in to a season of his career.
Well, yeah, as a head coach, because like
a known commodity, yeah. Because Curtis Rourke, nobody knew that he was going to have that season last year.
No, right. And besides that, when he was at James Madison, he was always bringing in a transfer, you know, kid that they knew that he had the opportunity to be that. But I think, like you said, I think you're right. He's excited because he has a known commodity that's played in a P4 conference at a school that wasn't, you know, as good as Indiana was a year ago, and could really point him in a position that if we put him behind center here with a great offensive line with the well.
Oh, Coach's signal there cutting out a little bit, so he'll get rejoined in a second. But I'm looking forward to seeing how much this offense can actually be better than it was a year ago. And I think that it will be, but it's getting tougher and tougher to make predictions preseason for any team in college athletics because of all the changes and then the additions. Every team is new and different, although the core of Indiana is still around. You've got the major pieces that are different at quarterback for one, but most of their major pieces are still intact. Defensively, we've talked about that, anchors on the line, linebacker in the defensive backfield, and then on the offensive line, Indiana has pieces back, but they filled in there as well. Same with the running back room, but now the difference at quarterback. So Gritty says it's her Friday. Oh, it must be a work-related thing. So who knows? But yeah, Coach will be back with us here in just a little bit. Someone was asking, I think Heath wanted to know who's the backup quarterback. Well, that's easy. We go from Fernando Mendoza to Alberto Mendoza. He will be your number two quarterback. I think that's not been a question. I think that's kind of known, but you say that going in to fall camp, that could always change. You never know. Someone could take over. Hey, it's up for grabs, but right now, it will be Alberto and Fernando as the number one and number two, QB1s and QB2s, which is how it was back in high school for them. Right, Coach? Well, he's kind of back, not a back, so he's working on his signal, so we'll get him hooked back in. But, yeah, it's going to be an exciting time around football for Indiana. I'm curious to see how quickly the fans jump on board this time. Do they wait to get past these three cupcake games before they jump on board?
Am I back?
Yes, sir. You're in and out. So, your signal's a little wonky today for some reason, but he'll be back with us here in just a second. But yeah, it's not that far away either. August 30th. What 6 weeks? Everybody's always thrown up how many days till kickoff. I should have it memorized by now. It's up there so often, but August 30th, man. We're not that far away. Next week is Big Ten Football Media Days out in Las Vegas. And then it's off to the races because after that, well, you got 5 weeks, 5.5 weeks to go before it comes on. So looks like we got you now there, man.
I have idea what the heck's going on, but there has been gremlins all over the place around this internet, whatever it may or may not be. But anyway, yes, you got the top two Mendoza boys, 1 and 2. And, I do think that Indiana has, a lot of answers on offense that maybe they didn't have a year ago.
It's got to start at the offensive line.
Well, we said this early in the year.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the offensive line being the best that Indiana's probably had in a very, very, very long time, and maybe the strength of their offense this year.
Depth is going to be a key. Mm-hmm. It kind of bit them a little bit last year, but not a little bit. It bit them last year. It was part of the reason that held them back in games like against Ohio State and against Notre Dame, of course. But they have increased, beefed it up a little bit. And they've got the Bison at their side this year, man. They may have to bring the Bison in at
That's
times.
Right. That's right. Hey,
short yardage situation. He'd be great for short yardage situations, let me tell you.
Well, there's no question about the Bison being that it factor, especially you put him in the backfield as a lead blocker even, and you got something blowing up the A-gap for you. But
what I'm saying.
You're correct. Yardage. Yeah, you're correct with the depth aspect of it this year as opposed to a year ago. I believe they've got as many as 7 or 8 that could play. And I don't think there's the drop off that there's has a tendency to be in years past. You know, when they got an injury, the drop off was pretty significant. So I do not think that is the case this year. And we've watched what Bob Stead has been able to do with with one hand tied behind his back with this offensive line. And he's done miraculous things in preparing the five guys to go out and play at a high level. And it's going to be fun to keep that group, like you said, healthy and provide them the best opportunity to run and pass the football.
Absolutely. And looking forward to it and see how the season kicks off because Indiana last year got their closest. I think one of the only few games they did not cover the spread all season up to Ohio State was the opening game. Against
Oh, daggone it.
We're really blanking out. Hey, man, I turned a year older yesterday. So, you know, it's.
Oh, happy birthday. You buried the lead there. Happy birthday.
I'm a one step closer to 60. But
I thought you were going to say one step closer to the grave.
Well, let's try not to say that. FIU. There it is. Yeah, Justin got it, I think. FIU was their kickoff game a year ago.
Hey, and that's Michael Penix's old school, right? No, that was the first school he played against.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when he first came onto the scene. Yeah. Yeah. But that would be the only game. And, you know, Old Dominion is going to be a formidable opponent for Indiana, just being that it's the first game of the year. And, you know, that's the game that kind of gets everybody a little bit puckered because of you just don't know what, you know, was going to happen in a game like situation because it's the first game of the year. And, you know, you're just trying to keep it as clean as humanly possible. But Old Dominion, pretty decent ball club. You know, we got the Grant Wilson kid that transferred from there. Now, he was hurt last year, so I don't think he played as much as he did his previous year there as well, where Coach Cignetti would have played against him when he was at James Madison. But the Old Dominion will be a good ball game for Indiana to kick off the year because after that, Kennesaw State and Indiana State, Kennesaw State's got a new coach. Indiana State will have two new coordinators, one offense, one defense, and they've really struggled here over the last few years at Indiana State. So those two games after Old Dominion, I don't know how much they will test Indiana prior to taking on Illinois, that fourth game at home, and kicks off the Big Ten season.
Yeah, and the recruiting has gone extraordinarily well for Indiana football, as well as the rivals and on three rankings were released. Three in-state targets inside of the top 200 that the Indiana's landed. That is always a good thing, as well as chasing a lot of elite out-of-state talent like Reynaldo Perez from Columbus, Ohio, is a four-star ranked number 101 overall, number two player from Ohio, though it might be difficult to pry him away from Ohio State. Yeah, it's going to be real difficult. Indiana already offered Perez. So they're going after guys that they really, you would think, don't have a shot at. But, hey, one of these days, someone's going to break that glass ceiling.
Well, they would have gotten Fahey had Ohio State had not offered him. And I think Indiana knew that going in that, you know, they were kind of there in case the pieces of the puzzle weren't lined there at Ohio State. But, you know, things shake out the way they're supposed to shake out. You never know what may happen down the road. So you always keep the lines of communication open with kids that you do not get, because in this day and age of the transfer portal, what you may lose now, you may get back on a rebound, especially if it's a kid that you know very well and you know he's potential. But the recruiting has been on fire. I do think, without the exception, I know the Guilford kid up here in Fort Wayne, the wide receiver, is supposed to announce tomorrow between Ohio State, Indiana, and Ole Miss, I believe. And if they were to get him, that would be another elite player that they would get. Now, it's going to be an uphill battle, but they've done enough to keep the kid's interest in Indiana high. And I talked to their head coach the other day at the media day for, you know, high school football up here in the Summit Athletic Conference the other night, and he wouldn't tip his hand on the young man, which, you know, I appreciate that. I can understand that from his perspective, that he didn't want to let them all out. He just said that, you know, he's considering all those top schools that he's gotten offers from, and he doesn't think there's one over the other. He's looking for the best avenue of opportunity, as well as taking care of his family. So that's the, you know, these are the factors in the old days never came into, you know, into factor. Now you're, you know, waiting to get something in return, dollars and cents wise. And the Northern Illinois coach, Thomas Hammack, who was a good running back out of Fort Wayne, actually recruited him when I was at Ball State. He's head coach in Northern Illinois, and he was inducted to the Hall of Fame, Indiana Football Hall of Fame, the other evening. I talked to him about NIL. He lost, I think, 9 players, 1 to Indiana, and one of his best defensive linemen went to Texas A&M for $950K. That's how much, I mean, you know, and he said, you know, we just don't, and they're going to struggle having the dollars and cents to even provide anything when it comes to paying student athletes, like even at the MAC level schools. And they just can't compete with those P4s coming in and taking kids because they're not going to have the money to match that type of money. And, you know, Indiana got the quarterback from their corner, the Knight kid that had the big pick against Notre Dame. So it's flattering for him that they had really good players that everybody else liked. But at the same time, it's frustrating for those guys because they're losing, you know, a better part of their team each and every year that they have to go out and replace. And it's just very difficult for those schools to be able to do that consistently. So, but that's the type of money that's going around. And it's hard to compete. But again, it'll be interesting to see where the Guilford kid goes, but overall, putting a button on it, you got to be ecstatic with a class that's already in the hopper per se. We'll be better with that when December rolls around, but a lot of good talent in this group.
No doubt, no doubt. Hey, we've got to take a break. Coach Griff is with us. It's Thursday. Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Back with more. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle here on this Thursday. Coach Griff with me on this day. The Mountain West has paused its expansion amid a media rights negotiation. There's basically the Mountain West is now the Pac-12 for the most part. There are, I think, 5 schools will be leaving the Mountain West for the Pac-12 next year. Boise State, Colorado State, who is on Indiana's future football schedule. As a matter of fact, I think a 27 game with Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, and Utah State. A lot of states in the Pac-12 coming up. So
what's interesting about that is NIU, Northern Illinois, that I just talked about with Coach Thomas Hammack, they are leaving the MAC to go to the Mountain West next in 26, which wow. I scratched my head on that.
So they're going to the Mountain West or the Pac-12?
Well, they're going to the Mountain West is what he told me the other evening. It happens in the 2026. And part of it was the money that they were going to get as an institution to go out there and, you know, all that. But this thing with, you know, the different conference alignments, the TV rights, the media rights, those lower tier leagues, the MAC, the, you know, the Group of Five or however you want to look at it, they are really struggling and they're going to continue to struggle. And I don't know how long they'll be able to stay at that level unless they start really cutting sports back. So,
The Mountain West will add Grand Canyon in all sports except football.
Yeah.
Hawaii, which plays football in the Mountain West already, will now join as a full member in 2026, along with UTEP, Texas, El Paso, Northern Illinois, as you mentioned, will play only football in the Mountain West, and UC Davis, University of California, Davis, will be a non-football member. So football only for Northern Illinois. Yeah. It's just, man, this stuff is just getting crazy. So convoluted.
They're going from a geographical footprint that fits Northern Illinois being in the Midwest and the Mid-American Conference being in the Midwest per se, and they've expanded some, as they have, to a league that's not even their footprint. I mean, can you imagine having to travel the travel that they're going to experience as a football team on away games. You're talking flying, and not just flying for a couple hours. Hell, if you go to Hawaii, that's going to be a 6-hour flight.
Plus, they're not going to have one of the guaranteed spots in the college football playoff.
No.
I don't know that that makes them more attractive as a CFP. It's just, I'm sure that that has to be where it is geared towards, but it's geared towards money. Maybe apparently if they have a better rights deal, they're going to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as simple as it gets.
Well, and that's the case. And I do think at some point with those group of five schools, you're going to see them do what the Big Ten has done and the SEC has done, where they've really taken a bunch of teams and, you know, start a big group of schools together. So, you know, you could take the Conference USAs and the Sun Belt and the MAC and all that. At some point, you may see those schools start really looking to form a bigger conference where it gives them more lucrative TV packages and maybe some dollars in order to compete. But it's going to be interesting. It already is interesting. I don't think there's any question Indiana has been prepared for this jump that they're in now with the rev share in NIL. I think they've done a great job of preparing for it. Michigan, on the other hand, is going to have a $27 million shortfall in their budget, of which $20 million of it is the rev share part of it, which doesn't make any sense to me at all on a premier institution like Michigan. I mean, it's crazy to see that they weren't adequately prepared for this situation at Michigan. And so they're going to have to explore other opportunities to raise money, like hosting concerts and stuff, to offset some of the, you know, costs that they're going to take on here as it pertains to the rev share.
He's pointing out that Kennesaw has the old IU quarterback at quarterback. I'm not sure which one that is, because there have been several that has gone that way. We'll find that out. Juju. How about Juju out in Colorado? I don't know that things are going to go so well at Colorado this year. I just don't have a very good feeling. I think that was kind of a flash in the pan with having a lot of excitement, with having a couple of big time players at the same time. I don't think that Deion Sanders is in this for the long haul, personally.
No, I think with the way they recruited him and had that picture of Shador handing over the keys, so to speak, to the driver's seat of being the quarterback of the future, I'm not quite sure that will come to fruition, as Deion Sanders hasn't even named a kid as a starter, because he's got three or four of them that are pretty darn good battling it out. So there's an example why you keep the communications all open to kids that go other places, because if, like a quarterback, if they go somewhere and they're buried on the depth chart, they're not going to stay. I mean, just not going to happen. And so that's why a guy like Juju or anyone else, Fahey, you keep the, you know, you don't want to burn any bridges, because you may ultimately get them on the rebound because of the relationship that you built with them during recruiting.
Yeah, and Indiana is doing a hell of a job recruiting on the quarterback side already, number one. Number two, you have a kid like Alberto Mendoza, who will have been waiting in the wings for, it would be his third season by the time he truly gets an opportunity next year, if that is the time. That's if Fernando is no longer in the fold. If he ends up, you know, being drafted in the NFL. Now, if he sticks around, then he'll have to wait one more year. But he's just a redshirt freshman. So but it's refreshing to see and the kids that understand, hey, I need to learn this college game here. I'm not someone who thinks that I'm ready to be the man, because that is so rare for a kid to be able to come in and start successfully at quarterback. You can look at Dylan Riola for Nebraska. Now, on one hand, it probably hurt them some last year, but on the other, it should help them immensely this season with all that experience that he gained last year.
Oh, there's no question. And I think the other thing that the Indiana staff does very well with these kids is they form a relationship with them off the field that their kids are comfortable there at Indiana. You didn't see a bunch of kids jump in the portal or anything like that. Like you see some of these other institutions because they're disgruntled. They're not playing, whatever. Indiana, on the flip side, they have a team that they keep kids around. They keep them involved. They're not treated like second class citizens because they may or may not start or whatever that case may be. So they've done a great job with that, especially at a quarterback position. Like I said, it's very tough. I mean, if a kid can go start somewhere else, then he's going to go start somewhere else. But I just think they do an overall great job in with their kids on and off the field, the relationship building that they've done through recruiting and then continue to do as a group, as a team. I just think they've done a great job with that. I mean, look at Lewis Moore. There's a prime example. They get the kid to come back from Ole Miss after he left after that last season at Indiana. He left for reasons like he wanted to win. That was the reason why he left. He wanted to win. When he came back, part of it was because, he wants to win. And second, because he missed the atmosphere that Indiana had both on and off the field. It's hard to duplicate that at other places. And it's always like that saying, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. So they've just done a tremendous job A to Z when it comes to player development. And that's one of their big selling points that I think they've done over the years.
Yeah, I agree with Philip that Riola showed a lot of potential last year. He looked like a freshman, but most of the time you don't get to see freshmen in those situations because they're not. But that should help him immensely, like I said. No hating on Deion. I just don't think he's in it for the long run. That's all I think that's far from hating on him, Five. But no, I think that it was more about his sons and that, but I just don't think that he's in it for the long run because of all that it takes to be a head coach in any sport, man, the recruiting battles and all of that. And I wouldn't, maybe that's the challenge that he wants. We'll certainly find out.
Philip the quarterback, says, by the way, at Kennewa State, Dexter Williams.
Oh, yeah. They had so many that
he transferred to from Georgia Southern to Kennewa State. So
Kennesaw.
I don't know. Call it a K. But anyway, Kennesaw. Dexter Williams Kennesaw. Is the young man.
Let's see. Yep. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I cannot wait to the football season. I think I mentioned this yesterday that Indiana is still not getting the respect that I think that they're valued at. They're not being valued like I think that they are. They're being valued right now as probably the sixth best team in the Big Ten. That would be, if I had to wager a guess, if you took a poll, they would average out to be the sixth best team. That's just a guess, though. Now, that may be different dependent upon if we're talking national people or more regional Big Ten-ish type people, because Illinois is getting a little more national love as being that team that is knocking next into that upper four, of course, of Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, and Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the four teams from the Big Ten that are expected to be college football playoff teams this year, right now. And it would be up to Illinois or Indiana to break into that party. And There's nothing to say that you can't get another team in there, but it would be very, very difficult because with just 12 slots, there's not a lot of room. And you're bumping up against the SEC, and there's already blowback from last year. So that's going to be in people's heads. So it's going to be a lot of you're going to have to overcome it. You're going to have to do a lot to overcome that. And for a team like Indiana, I think 10-2 would do that. 11-1 would absolutely, again, would do that for certain because of the wins that that would mean. But I'm wondering if a 10-2 Indiana would be good enough. It absolutely should be. We'll have to wait till because things, perceptions change. I mean, 6 games into this season, we're going to know a lot about what people think about Indiana.
No question. No question at all. And, 10-2 would mean, in theory, I guess you would say the two losses would be Penn State and Oregon, which wouldn't help Indiana as a 10-2 team because you figure they got to beat one of those schools if they're not in the top of the Big Ten to have that impressive win, because they would both be on the road. But anyway, it's such a crapshoot to start thinking who is or who isn't going to make the playoffs and so forth and so on. It all depends on where you finish, how you finish, and how you stack up amongst other SEC schools. I mean, right now the Big Ten and SEC are, on opposite sides of the fences when it comes to expansion to a 16-team playoff.
Because, and Heath is asking that question, and we talked about that, and Coach, you're entering exactly why.
Yeah. Well, the biggest reason, and we've talked about it before, the SEC does not want to move to 9 conference games. And
the Big Ten is
saying we've got to have equality across the board. We need everyone at a 9-game conference schedule. And the SEC is balking at that, and the Big Ten's not going to move from that. So until there's they come to an agreement somehow, some way, we're not going to see a 16-team playoff until that is resolved. So there's going to be it's 12 teams for here until that is settled as it pertains to the format of, a 16-team type of format. So, and that's going to be a hard one to get by. I mean, it's really going to be a hard one to get by to get to.
I don't know. I after last year of what happened, the SEC not getting the teams in that they thought that they should have gotten in, which I think was kind of debunked when Tennessee got the snot knocked out of them over in Columbus. But their SEC wants as many opportunities to get as many teams in there as possible because they're all the end-all, be-all of college football.
And the fact that the money, if you get in, it's pretty good for that school because it's not about winning a national champion per se. It's being one of the top 12 teams in the college football playoffs and what that brings to that, to that school dollars and cents-wise. So the more you have in, the more you make. That's the, that's the reason why you're seeing the SEC pound their fist on the table. And, they want to be the king of kings. And the fact of the matter is they haven't won a national title for a couple years now. Big Ten's won it. And, that's the thing. It's SEC's barking up a tree that they really can't fulfill right now because they haven't had the top seat in the national limelight. So we'll see. I mean, I do like Indiana's chances. You're correct. We're going to find out a lot week 4, 5, and 6 about where this team is at. And, there's no question this year is a little bit more of a test than a year ago in terms of how everything sets up, with that Illinois, Iowa, Oregon, 3-game set there. That's a pretty good 3-game set. I don't know if Indiana really didn't have that until the latter part of the year when they went Michigan and Ohio State back to back. After everything was said and done. Now we were saying Nebraska, Washington was going to be a huge test, and it was. It still was, even though it wasn't to the extent that we thought it would be. It's still going to be a darn good year with the teams that they're playing, that they could have a good resume at the end of the year and have a rightful argument to be included rather than excluded.
Who will be the surprise of this season? We'll talk about that when we come back. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. We're back with more. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Jim Coyle with you, as always, and Coach Griff along as well. Last year, of course, Indiana shocked not only the Big Ten, but the world of college football, as they not only went from being a doormat to a kicking the door in to the first 12-team college football playoff. And it was enjoyable, to say the least. Now, who's the next Indiana? Indiana? Very well may be. I think that the odds-on favorite to be the next Indiana is Indiana, because it's a very sustainable product that Kurt Cignetti has going, has put together, the coaching staff, the continuity, the what they're brought back, especially in this day and age. They've built on it. They some perfect transfer maneuvers on the offensive line. They've just added some pieces that they've needed to add to get better. They've done what they've needed to do to get better. Now the schedule is also tougher, but that's okay. You gotta play with the big boys if you want to be considered a big boy.
Yeah, last year they were the Cinderella story of college football. When Cignetti was able to catch lightning in a bottle, and they have continued to build upon that year, as we can see in the offseason. But when you look at other teams in the Big Ten that could have a Indiana-esque type of year, I mean, Illinois is an easy pick. Illinois was right there on the doorstep anyway, based upon their year. Last year, they were a 10-win team. But teams that could all of a sudden flip the switch and go from the outhouse to a penthouse, you know, you look at a team like Michigan State, are they going to, you know, they could be a team that could get on a run with that staff and that quarterback they've got coming back. There's a, you know, they have that mentality there that could flip a switch, and they lost some close ball games a year ago. And then you can never count out. And I always say this with Coach Schiano. His teams, you never can count out from getting on a run, because they have done it in the past under him, and they could do it again. So Rutgers is one of those teams that is kind of getting some of that talk, just because.
But do they have the resources to stay in that, to get into the upper echelon of the Big Ten? I mean, no one thought Indiana did. Let's be honest.
Well, right.
And they did it without resources, if we're being quite honest.
Yeah, I don't think they're at the top. I don't think they're at the bottom. I think they're where they need to be based upon, you know, the factors that they given. Do I think Rutgers could be or have those resources? Yeah, because they're kind of the institution in New Jersey. And Schiano always has that ability, I think, to sell his program to big time people. So, I don't know where Rutgers loses a little bit of footing, in my opinion, is in the recruiting world because of location and things of that magnitude, but we'll see. But those are the kind of teams that can always flip a switch and have that, you know, magical year that would, you know, catapult them into a position to get in the college football playoffs like Indiana did a year ago.
Yeah, Robert, the truth, Carter from down in the Evansville area, points out the better running game. And it's not that Indiana's running game was bad last year, but it didn't do much. It didn't add a lot. I'm not going to say it took away like it had in the last season under Tom Allen, but it just didn't seem to do a lot for the offense.
Well, I think they had a good running game for the better part of the year compared to what they've had been. And they had significant yards per game in the running game. Now, where it really hurt them is against the big boys, like we just discussed earlier, the Michigans, the Ohio States, and Notre Dame. They couldn't run the football at all in those three games. And that's where the offensive line equation comes into the discussion. They're going to have to run the ball against those type of teams, because you saw what happens when they got one dimensional. Those defenses will just eat them alive because of the talent they have. And they were able to get to the quarterback without putting much pressure on. So the running game in those type of scenarios has to be better. I do think it will be. I think Hemby is going to be in black. Those two guys are going to be beast. And then the kid from, is it BB Juniors? I think from the Alabama Birmingham.
UAB?
Yeah, yeah. Those three, I do think, are talented enough to make offensive linemen correct. And I do think Hemby and BB, especially BB, has the speed to take things the distance, because that's kind of where they lacked a little bit a year ago, is they didn't really have that big home run threat. Ellison had a couple big time runs, but they just have to be better in those games where the competition's a little bit better on the other side of the ball. And that's going to be a key component.
I can tell you something else they're going to be better at, and that is the deep ball, because that was not really part of the arsenal last year.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Other than the back shoulder throw conceptually, yeah, but as far as taking the top off the defense down the field,
And I think you're going to see a lot more of that with Fernando Mendoza. He's got that deep arm, and Indiana has the wide receivers that can do that. So it'll be interesting to see. But, boy, nobody had that back shoulder throw down better than Curtis Rourke did. I mean, he killed teams with that thing.
Yeah, and it's a great option for teams that want to play man-free football and, you know, get in a 50-50 ball deal. And when you got a quarterback that can throw the back shoulder throw consistently, and Curtis did a year ago, you saw what it did for their offense and how it bailed them out of situations, whether it be third down or an opportunity for six. And he was able to execute that at a high level.
We've got to take a break. Lots more coming up. Coach Griff with us. Jim Coyle here as always. Indiana Sports B Radio back with more after this. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Coach Griff with us. Jim Coyle here as always as well. I hope you're doing well. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. If you're following along on social media, hit the like buttons, subscribe, and all that good stuff. Or if you're listening on one of our great radio station affiliates, like 97.7 ESPN, the Ref, always the great call down in Evansville, the voice of the region. 12:30 a.m., 104.7 FM on WJOB up in the region, and on Fort Wayne's sports station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked where you got it. You got it in the right spot. Coach Griff with us, and been talking some football today. Just saw a question a second ago that I missed, but Caleb asking, will Indiana get anything in the passing game from the tight end position? I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised that did not happen more last year. Because of what I had seen in Kurt Cignetti offenses prior to that, the tight end was a more integrated in the offense, but just didn't have the guy, I think, that they wanted to use that for last year, maybe. But they also had greater weapons around that seemed to work quite well.
Yeah, I think I was surprised as well, because of what you just stated, having seen what it a Kurt Cignetti led offense had done at James Madison prior to arriving. As far as the tight end position goes, you don't replace a Horton the way he was able to be utilized. We'll see. That's one of the question marks offensively, quite honestly, is the tight end spot, how they're going to utilize him, because Horton was a guy they could line up attached to the line of scrimmage, or used him off the ball or as a wide receiver and spread him out. So that's going to be the question. Do they get that from the two young men they got, Nowinski, and I can't remember the other kid that's from Tennessee at the moment. The kid
originally from Notre Dame.
He was originally from Notre Dame and then went to Tennessee. Yeah. Nowinski is the kid from Wisconsin that I think they're pretty high on because he does have the ability not only to block, because he's a pretty good blocker. I do think he has decent enough hands that he can go out and, you know, catch the football. The kid that's coming in from Tennessee that went to Notre Dame, he's a little bit more of a hybrid slash type of player because he does have the ability to run routes and catch the ball. So that is the question mark for me, is where they're at there at that position and how well they pick up from where they were with Horton a year ago. But we're going to see, and we may see more four receiver sets too than we have in the past, because they may feel that they have to put that fourth receiver out in the formation because they don't have the Horton type of tight end that could do what he did a year ago.
Well, earlier we were talking about the differences between the Big Ten and the SEC, and it just comes down to the number nine. Well, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey yesterday reiterated his belief that the league should adopt a nine-game schedule.
Wow.
Long-discussed point that could lead to a decision about the future of that's the difference right there. Sankey said the conference has been discussing a nine-game league schedule since the Clinton administration, but a decision could finally come in the ensuing weeks or months. That tells you enough right there. Come on.
Yeah.
Crapper, get off the pot, man. What are you waiting on? Now it's costing them money. Now that it has a serious impact with their money making. So it's going to come to fruition, I have no doubt. I think we should be working towards that, Sankey said in a wide-ranging interview with ESPN at SEC Media Days. My life doesn't end if we don't. There's this absolutist notion that he's going to dictate what has to happen. I think we should have an adult conversation. We should be able to make a decision. I think nine games would promote great interest through the year, but it would be hard to coach. Well, tough. Oh my God, what, are you nuts?
Yeah.
That's hard to coach.
Yeah, that's a cop out.
These guys are paying $10 million.
Yeah,
I don't want to hear hard to
plus
coach.
The kids are paying millions of dollars now, so don't get
they're getting the coaches. Some of these coaches are being paid nearly $1 million a game.
Yeah. Well, the interesting concept there is that he's advocating for it, because I've never heard him come out and say that's his position. The SEC would get hammered every season when they have that week where they step out of conference play in like week 8 or 9 or wherever it falls, and they play, you know, a group of five team, or a team that's from the football subdivision leagues, you know, like Indiana State and those type of schools, you know.
Now, this would also benefit schools like Indiana. Sure. Let's be honest, because there's the perceived notion that I've already said of Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and that's at the moment. Mm-hmm. Wait till all USC has to do is have one good year. Boom, and they'll get catapulted into that conversation just because of their past. Because perception is reality, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it doesn't make exactly. It real, but it's reality a lot. So
Nebraska could be that team as well.
Yeah, exactly. They're another team that has just been a sleeping giant. But this would benefit Indiana as much as it would anybody in the SEC, because it gives you more room. It would provide, what, 11? The 16-team model would provide 11 at-large bids? That's going to happen, but the SEC coaches,
yeah,
And how is this up to coaches? When have coaches ever been allowed to make decisions? It's always been the ADs, presidents of schools. Now, I know that they would go talk to their coach, but I don't know that that's always a rubber stamp deal.
Well, yes, and the thing that they're balking at, as coaches are, is that if you had another conference game in the SEC, that's a 50-50 proposition whether you win or not, as opposed to having the guaranteed of that fourth win on your schedule because of the non-conference setup. But yeah, there's no reason why the SEC is not playing nine conference games. And that creates a level playing field to be evaluated. Now, where they were moaning and groaning a year ago, it was like with Ole Miss, is they were trying to say that their record was good, was better than, you know, Indiana and some of these other places, but they lost two conference games and it really hurt their strength of schedule because of who they
lost
to. Not
only did they lose, well, they lost to a crap Kentucky team at home. The SEC wants to talk about what benefits them at the time.
Sure.
They're like, well, who'd you beat? Who'd you beat? Well, you know what? Who did you lose to?
Yeah, right.
That's something they conveniently will ignore. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you beat. You know, maybe it was a horrible day for them, but you lost to Kentucky at home? Well, get out of here.
Well, look at Alabama.
Alabama lost to Vanderbilt? Get out of here.
And an Oklahoma team that...
the worst in the SEC.
Yeah. So now they're trying to say that, well, going on the road into the SEC is a lot, but it's not. Here's the thing. Agreed. They have to be a nine-team schedule and conference schedule. That will put all this debating to rest because it'll be evaluated on the same parameters as everyone else. A nine-team conference schedule, you get three non-conference schedules to schedule, and away we go. It takes six to be bowl eligible or whatever that is. And then when you talk about the college football playoffs, it's going to be subjectivity on top of what they can pull for algorithms and strength of schedule and, you know, all those type of things. But it will always come down to number one, win-loss record. What is your win-loss record? You know, a 11-1 team is better than a 10-2 or a 10-3 team or whatever you look at on paper until you get into the dynamics of what makes them better. But win and loss record always goes a long way in the subjectivity aspect of evaluation. So it'll never be perfect. There's always going to be somebody that gets left out, and that person that gets left out is going to be bitching and moaning for the better part of the offseason as to why they didn't get in. But I agree that they need to go nine conference games. Now, I have never seen Stanky say anything about that openly, about politicking for them to do that. He's always had a defense of why they shouldn't do it, not why they should. He's always been defensive of an 8-game conference schedule.
He's saying what the coaches wanted to hear, and that is how you keep your job.
What Nick Saban wanted him to say.
There you go. Exactly, specifically, because I'm not sure that Nick Saban still isn't the commissioner of the SEC, if you want to be honest, as he sits in his chair at ESPN. I think that he has an incredible pulpit, and he uses that pulpit for the SEC. And oh, no question. I find that, to be honest with you, I find it just offensive. I don't mind opinions, but it's not an opinion. His is an uber-biased opinion. Not only does he think that the SEC is the best, Alabama's the best. I mean, he would have put Alabama in over Indiana last year. I will guarantee it.
Oh, there was no question. That was one of his major tiffs, is that even though Alabama lost to Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, he still believed that they were better than Indiana. Well, they went to the bowl game and got beat by Michigan.
Who happened to lose? Indiana.
Right.
So none of that matters. Just like when Tennessee went to Ohio State and got throttled.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, it will never be a perfect selection aspect of things. You're going to have your no doubters that should be in, and then you're going to have the subjectivity of everybody else on who else gets in besides those guys that are the no brainers. And there's always going to be someone left out. Now we'll see what all happens with this College Sports Commission and whether or not they continue down the line with the committee that selects the playoffs teams, or does that phase out and it goes to something else that they want? I know that they were politicking for Saban to be ahead of the playoff
committee. That should never, ever, under no circumstances should that ever, ever happen.
Right. Well, you're right. And
that's like automatically giving the SEC two votes. It is. It's a fact. Yeah. I mean, it's just you just gave them two votes on anything.
Yeah.
Without question. So, but we'll find out. Indiana definitely has opened the floodworks for strength of schedule argument going forward in the college football playoffs. That I will promise you, because there was a lot of chatter about that, because you combine that with how they lost to the two best teams that they played. Well, you know what? They still comparative did better than Tennessee did at Ohio State. And so I'm like, their first round loss was not as bad as others, but none of those got hammered like Indiana did.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? All of that is going to be put to rest this season, because the schedule is there. I've talked about this a lot. I don't care what anybody has to say after this year. Indiana will have been tested. Now, they can't go to Penn State and Oregon and just get the crap kicked out of them. I'm not saying they can't go there and win, but they also cannot go there and get the crap kicked out of them.
No, right.
Just be competitive at the worst case. They have to win one of those three games. I've said that. I don't care which one it is. Iowa would be the more likely scenario, one would think, at this moment. But hey, who's to say Iowa's not going to be better than Oregon? I don't know at this moment. Mm-hmm. I know more about Iowa's quarterback than I do Oregon's.
All right.
So it will be fun and interesting. That is something that we will know. You've got Wisconsin and Luke Fickell, who's kind of finding himself, his seat is getting warm. It's not, boy, you're not seeing the growth in Wisconsin that I expected under Luke Fickell.
That's probably one of the shocking hires in that cycle. And when it comes to the success factor, they were trying to do things at Wisconsin that just didn't fit their personnel or their traditional makeup of, you know, pro style offense, run the ball, play action pass, things of that nature. But out of all the coaches,
Kirk Cignetti did that. I mean, you can't say Indiana had any style or tradition, but he brought a complete change in, and there was no problem with that. But I don't think that the difference is Kirk Cignetti brought the personnel to be able to make the changes he made. Luke Fickell wasn't able to do that.
No, right. And the thing that I would say is he is probably the only coach in the Big Ten that's on a hot seat that I can think of off the top of my head right now. He barely survived this past year, and he's made some wholesale changes again, which is never good. It may give you a view of the fans that you're trying to do something in terms of winning by changing personnel, but that only goes so far. But Wisconsin is, again, like we talked about Nebraska, these are two traditional Big Ten power type of schools that right now they're down. Yeah, but they're not going to be down forever. And they're the team that they could also flip the script as well. be a team that comes out of nowhere and gets in the college football playoffs. I think personally between those two, I think Nebraska is probably closer to that type of team. Now that they got Dana Holgorsen in there as the coordinator, I think that's going to help them offensively. And because they have the backing at Nebraska to do a lot of things and they got the money. So, but I would say he is the closest one in the Big Ten as it pertains to the proverbial hot seat, that he may not have an entire year to show what he can do if he doesn't get off to a good start, because I think it's not going to be tolerated as like it was a year ago when they were going through a lot of struggles.
Yeah, well, and we saw that Purdue had the cojones to realize that, and after 2 years, and say, hey, this is not going well, boom, and they made a right decision.
Right.
And that's why that Luke Fickle probably finds his seat as the warmest in the Big Ten now. That's because Ryan Walters is gone already. But
that was a good hire by Purdue. Purdue made a good hire when they replaced Walters. I mean, we'll see, but I would say on paper, it looks like a pretty strong hire.
The thing is, why I would not do that now in retrospect, especially when you look at Kurt Cignetti, Ryan Walters did not have the ability to bring anything with him.
No, exactly right. No, I'm just talking about the hire they made.
But I think that's for going forward, that's something you have to think about. Sure. What all can this guy bring with him? What's the package that comes along with him?
The criteria for all that. Yeah, sure. I think that's a big part of it. When it comes to evaluating the potential of a candidate, especially those that are at a group of five school or whatever those schools are at, what, you know, is there a talent pool there that individual could bring with him where they could get that Kurt Cignetti-esque type of hire and bring in bona fide players that they think can compete at that, whatever it's the Big Ten or SEC level. Yeah, I do think that you're correct. The other thing I think Kurt Cignetti has done is telling ADs it's okay to go look for an older guy that has a proven resume of winning football games and not the flash in the pants, let's go make a public hire that looks good. So that is another thing Kurt Cignetti did, was provided those coaches that are out there that have been in, you know, certain levels for years and years and years, but they've won. And if you're winning at one level, you know how to win at any level for that matter. And like, that's what Coach Cignetti was able to do, because of what his mentality was and how he puts programs together.
What are your thoughts on, first of all, did anyone watch the ESPYs last night? I did not.
No.
I know Lee Corso was honored, so that was great. And Caleb pointing out that Luke Fickle's got a huge buyout. That'll keep you employed for a little while longer as well. So
nowadays, I think it does. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the school, too. I mean, if you're a Texas A&M, obviously, no. $77 million. We got that.
Yeah.
We Oral got country. That. But I'm trying to find a story of apparently that Roswell's pointing out a raid in Westfield involving fake sports memorabilia, multi-millions of dollars, and the suspect is no Dead. Longer with us.
For so sports million. Wow.
Well, you know what? That's what OJ ultimately got sent to prison for. Not for murder. Not for the grisly two murders that he committed, but for stealing his own damn Heisman Trophy back.
Yeah, that's right.
How screwed up is this world?
I know.
But, that's crazy. But Indianapolis is a big-time hub of sports and sports memorabilia, all that stuff.
Yeah, they are.
So not a big time surprise here, but I guess big enough to die for, huh?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, that's a little, I don't know if you want to call out of the realm of possibility that somebody would lose their life over sports memorabilia.
Well, police in Westfield, Indiana said they discovered an individual deceased with a self-inflicted gunshot wound while executing a search warrant in regards to a counterfeit sports memorabilia scheme on Wednesday. The Westfield Police Department confirmed an active investigation into a fake memorabilia operation to clicked and said they executed a search warrant at 16. Doesn't matter the address. That investigation extended to another street where arrival officers found the dead body. So there's That's sad. More stories. Yahoo Sports has that up right now, but not good. Click the name of it. I'm not familiar with it, but I'm not into sports memorabilia that I haven't just collected along the way myself. So,
it's a really big, deal nowadays. You got shows on YouTube that, you know, sell this memorabilia. You see them all the time on X and TikTok and things of that nature. So it has become a pretty big industry once again. So the value must be there for people to be actively involved in it, especially if you're making fake memorabilia. There must be a lot of money because that's the reason why they do it. So,
yeah, I've only, like I said, if I haven't gotten it myself,
yeah,
not happening. So I understand that. And I know a lot of people into it. I wish I'd been smart enough to keep baseball cards when I was.
I agree. I had some really good ones back in the day that you just never knew would, you know, pan out. I mean, I believe I had a Hank Aaron card at one point, and of him in kind of one of his first early seasons.
You had one?
I had one.
What the hell? Did you see the Hank Aaron? Did you watch the Major League Baseball All-Star game?
I did not. I did
not. Go back and watch the tribute that they did to Hank Aaron. It was just cool.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. The Home Run Derby.
Afterwards?
What's that?
You talking about the Home Run Derby after the All-Star game?
No, I was the Home Run Derby where they had the guy that ended up winning it back when he's like 8 years old was, had that video of him saying, I'm the home, you know, Derby champ. And, you know, that as a sports fan sends chills up your spine because every kid, even, you know, us when we were little, we're always that one was going to make, you know, that splash that ultimately propelled us into national spotlight. And this guy, I mean, it was pretty cool.
Well, the first father son all-star duo team, not at the same time, made it. I guess Ken Griffey never made it. He was never really an all-star for Cincinnati. I mean, he was a starter, but I don't know. I mean,
was he never an
all-star?
I can't remember. I thought he
it's
was
hard, at least but one. But you got to understand, you're on a team that had George Foster.
Oh, God. They had
Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Dave Concepcion, Tony Perez. Who am I listening? Ken Griffey in right, George Foster in center.
Seaver is a pitcher.
Left, Cesar Geronimo. See, that's the difference between when I was a kid and now. I can still name the starting lineup for my Cincinnati Reds.
Absolutely.
The starting lineup, because they were there for so long. Amazing. Now I'm like, I know the other than De La Cruz for the Reds, and how about this Abbott kid, the pitcher? He was in the All-Star game the other night.
Yeah.
And, just so much would love to see these mid-market teams be able to freaking compete. I'm sick and tired of the Dodgers, the Yankees, but although the Yankees are not, I haven't even looked, but I just happened to notice that the Toronto Blue Jays, I think, are actually leading the American League East. Yeah, they are by 2 games over the Yankees, 3 games over the Red Sox, 5.5 games over Tampa Bay. What a great, the American League East. That's a great division. Every team except for last place Baltimore has a winning record. And then now you've got Detroit in the Central Division.
Mm-hmm.
Great to see that, because the Central Division is in the American League very similar to the National League. You've got smaller market teams, Detroit, Minnesota, Kansas City, who won a World Series in 2015. Right. So that shows me that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland, Chicago, White Sox. Although Chicago is a big city, they treat their team like they're from Timbuktu. 32-65. Have they become? Nope. The Colorado Rockies still awful. God awful.
Yeah.
I still cannot get used to Houston Astros being in the American League either.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I agree with you.
But they're leading the West. And then over the National League, the Phillies, our boy, all-star MVP, Kyle Schwarber. Yeah, Kyle Schwarber won it for the National League with 3 long balls in the postgame. They won it. It was determined by a home run derby of sorts after the All-Star.
Oh, really? Wow.
Each team, because it ended up tied, and a baseball game could go freaking 19 innings let it. That one would not have, but being it's an All-Star game, most teams don't want their players playing longer. Pitching would have been – the issue there. But Philadelphia leading the National League East, the Mets a half a game behind them. And then after that, it's no one really within reach. In the Central, the Cubbies. Boy, a lot of Cubby fans out there, and they're got a 1-game lead over Milwaukee. The Cardinals kind of cooled off. They're 6.5 back. The Reds, still with a winning record, though, at least, 7.5 games back. Things change after the All-Star break. It's going to be interesting to see who can do what. And then over in the West, the Dodgers, they have a 5.5-game lead over the Padres, who San Francisco Giants right about there as well. So the Arizona Diamondbacks, they should be in the American League. Bring Houston back to the National League. I don't know why that came to be.
Yeah.
I can't either. I don't know or I don't remember why, but I'm still not a fan of it. No.
I couldn't.
They were part of the National League West.
Yeah.
When the Reds were in the West, of course, the Reds were in the West with the Dodgers and the Astros.
Yeah, that never made sense either.
I don't know. But there you go. Trade the Diamondbacks. Yeah, they're both in the West. So trade the Diamondbacks for the Astros. That's what I say. But nobody cares what I think. Oh, and the Reds and the Braves are playing at the Bristol Motor Speedway. How about them apples?
Didn't even realize that one. That's
they showed a setup for it the other night, but I knew about it. I forgot. The Bristol Motor Speedway is one of the most unique sports venues in America.
Yeah.
It is a NASCAR track. They did. It's a NASCAR track, if you're not familiar with it, that is like, they call it the last Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of is, because it's a half mile racetrack, but it is built. It holds 165,000 people.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. It's a unique venue in a lot of respects because of that.
That may be the second largest venue in America. You stop and think, who the hell has that? Yeah. That's crazy. But, you're right. Not only they have NASCAR races there, they did a dirt race there with NASCAR once, but then they also had a football game, which that was wild. Virginia Tech, maybe, and somebody I can't remember.
It was Tennessee.
Tennessee and Virginia Tech, maybe?
Yeah. I think that's what it was. Tennessee and Virginia Tech.
And Tennessee, let me tell you, their fans follow them through the depths of hell.
Yeah.
I've seen Indiana play Tennessee twice in bowl games, and nothing is more memorable than the more recent Gator Bowl, I believe it was, in Jacksonville. I'm like at the hotel, I'm thinking, boy, Indiana people, fans are showing up for this football game. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
We got to the stadium. Oh, ho, ho, timeout. It was an 80-20 Tennessee deal. And
my.
So we got that going for us, which is nice. Hey, got to take a break. Haven't done that yet. We get talking, can't shut up. But that's what we're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Coach Griff with us. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle here on this Thursday. Coach Griff along as well. And, man, I went out yesterday and played golf by myself, 9 holes, just to get some exercise. Waited till 6 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
And even though it wasn't temperature as hot, I don't care. It was like being in an oven for an hour and a half. I mean, I know very few of you out there probably have ever done something called hot yoga. I've done that. And let me tell you, ironically, Coach, I remember the first, maybe every time I did it, you're in a room for an hour and a half doing nothing but these stupid yoga poses. Okay. Uh-huh. That, you know, do a little pose, right? Well, big deal. I forget the temperature in there. I'm thinking it was like 105 in the room. But I can tell you immediately after when I got out, because at first I'm like, dude, what? Some poses. You know, you're sitting there doggy downward, all that, whatever that stuff was. I'm like, how bad can it be? It's a bunch of women in here. That was a positive part on top of that. No. But when I was done, I went straight to the shower. I hate cold water. I turned on the cold water only and stood under that shower for like 20 minutes. I had not had that feeling of your body being taken to extremes since two-a-days. And it's exactly what it's exactly the thought that came to my head when I did it. I was like, why are you doing this?
Right.
Because that's what I would say to myself every day after the second two-a-day practice. Why are you doing this to yourself? Because you're dying. You're dead. If you haven't gone through it, you don't get what it's like to carry 20 pounds of equipment with a helmet. And the helmet is the big part because it keeps all that heat trapped into your head.
Right.
In August, 2 weeks, 2-3 times a day. It was the most brutal 2 weeks of my life every year, without doubt. But this stupid hot yoga right there. I mean, it doesn't have all of the aspects of the cardio that goes that added to it. It wasn't as difficult as two-a-day practices. But it brought that same feeling of the exhaustion of your body, and had that same feeling yesterday. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was talking to my dad afterwards, hadn't gotten in the shower yet. And I was complaining about it. He's like, man, it must be hot up here. And I'm like, yeah. And Alexa, what's the temperature? 80. And I'm like, my ass.
Yeah.
It feels like 800, but yeah, that just shows it wasn't even that hot, but it didn't matter. I was physically exhausted.
I bet. And it's not even going to be any better this coming week with the heat indexes up to 115.
And that's something that you've got the NFL camps. They're starting.
Yeah. Another now, week, I believe.
Most of those guys are smart enough. They stay in relative shape. You have right. to. If you come in cold, even back in high school, we worked out during the summer to a degree. I mean, we weren't running, you know, like we were about to be running, because it's hard to make yourself do that kind of stuff right. that you know you're going to have to do. But, brutal. But now, and back then, though, back in my day, there wasn't anything as heat exhaustion. There wasn't right. no such thing. There was no such thing as heat exhaustion.
Well,
you know when
yeah.
we got water? We got water when the coaches got thirsty.
Right.
You know
take
how
a couple
far
salt
we ran?
Tablets. Yeah.
You know how far we ran? We ran until they got tired. So, yeah, just joking around a little bit, though. But I don't know that there's, boy, anything like fall football camp. It may be one of the more difficult things. And go back in the days, look up, if you haven't seen the movie or whatever it was, The Junction Boys.
Yeah.
That was about, Bear Bryant, when he was at Texas A&M, he also coached at Kentucky before that.
Yeah.
But Bear Bryant at Texas A&M, and they damn near killed him if they didn't kill some of those guys.
Yeah.
Back then. But, you're
not in Texas and Florida in those months, that's for sure.
I'm sitting here talking about India. Can you imagine being in Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Texas 2-a-day. How about that? Texas 2-a-days, baby.
I was in Florida for 2-a-days at one of my stops. I've never experienced the amount of heat that was rising from the Bermuda grass that you could see in the morning. It was hot. And that's the good old Florida weather. But those days, the days that we were playing and stuff, the 2-a-days were kind of a rites of passage type of deal. The biggest thing is in today's game, yeah, they really regiment what you can and can't do. Like you can't have consecutive full padded practice nowadays. When we were in 2-a-days, it was always full pads.
The first 3 days. First 3 days, you got to get used to the helmet, the pads,
right. Acclimation period.
Your neck.
Oh,
trust
yeah,
me, your hurt. Neck hurts just from carrying that helmet around. What's a helmet weigh? Or back then, what did a helmet weigh? Five pounds?
I couldn't give you an accurate weight on those things, but I know what you're referencing in terms of your neck. Your neck was always sore those first couple of days, and you would think, well, I haven't hit anybody, and you didn't realize it's, well, when you carry that bucket on your neck, it takes a while to get used to.
Gritty says, try doing a 5... Whoops, I hit it wrong. Try doing a 5K every day in July. I can't get up early enough to beat the heat. That's another thing. I hated. And when I say the word hate, every letter is capitalized. Hated running long distance. That was not my thing. Yeah, my brother was a long distance, liked playing soccer, running long distance. I was a sprinter, ran hurdles. You know, football, but boy, in the beginning, they would make us run long distance and it just about killed me.
Oh,
I hate it.
The mile run test. And
yes. No, it was a mile and a quarter for us.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all, they were not in my vocabulary.
Non-linemen, specialty players, whatever you want to be. Yes. I feel special right now. And if you didn't make it in a certain time, you had to come in at 6 a.m. before every 2-a-day practice.
Yeah.
And I remember,
extra conditioning.
By God, that is not happening to me. So I damn near killed myself making that.
You had to value your sleep.
Gritty says 3.1 miles is not long distance. Let me tell you, the 0.1 miles is long enough distance for me. Sister.
Yeah, I was going to say anything over a mile gives my blood pressure up a little bit, but congrats to those that can go out and do that. It's definitely a big athletic accomplishment when you can go out and run for those type of distances and do it consistently and effortless. In some respects,
you've got to stay, but you do have to stay wary of that now. They're so much smarter now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Your body, you can do so much more for your body going in just by the stuff that you take in. Like I said, they'd laugh at you. Mm-hmm. And now they've got water over there. Go get it whenever you want it.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? I remember when I would have killed somebody for a drink of water.
Yeah. But usually it wasn't that good because usually it was set up through a trough. It wasn't those little things that came out to you and you squirted it in your mouth, but, you had the old trough to set up where they had the PVC pipe that they drilled.
Yes, ran a hose down through it.
Yeah, those were the days now. I tell you.
That was after me. All we had was the water bottles.
Yeah,
and that's another thing. That's another thing. All we had was the water bottles, and that meant a manager with the water bottle. So if you didn't find a manager with the water bottle, you ain't getting any water.
Yeah. And sometimes the managers may not have showed up for practice.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, it's more regulated today on what you can and can't do. Heat indexes are followed. I mean, they're going to tell you when you can and can't go practice based upon those indices. And like I said, you can't have consecutive practices where you have full pads on. So if you're in a day where you have officially two practices, one of them's going to be in uppers only because you can't go full padded twice in a day. And the fact you can't really have full tackle. But remember last year, we were quite surprised on Sig's philosophy about this. They had had one practice where they allowed tackling, full tackling, which was shocking because Indiana's defense had very minimal issues tackling. And previous years, that was
issues tackling in the one single season combined than I think that they're going to have in the first three seasons under Cignetti.
Yeah, right, right. And it was fanatic.
And injury prevention.
Sure. Well, that comes from the strength program that they've employed and the things they do there now with that as well. But part of injury prevention as well is the banging. And he does a good job of not banging them up in camp so that they're fresh and ready to go for the season. And when they said they only tackled once, it was like, whoa, I never heard of that one before. I mean, there isn't a defensive coordinator in America would not blow their, you know, top for only having one full tackling practice prior to game one. So there's many different ways to do things. And nowadays, as like I said, there is a little bit more control out of the hands of the coaches because of extenuating factors that are monitored by team doctors and trainers and that personnel as it pertains to that. So it's probably better that way than it used to be. Or I'm just kind of surprised there wasn't more tragedies in the older days when it came to that aspect of heat stroke and, you know, all the things associated with what we did back then.
Indiana in final three for running back Arwin Jackson. He goes to Chaminade Madonna Prep in Hollywood, Florida, and he has kind of whittled his deal down to Auburn, Indiana, and Syracuse. So Indiana in good company in several recruiting battles. Yeah. Now, I understand that it may take a minute, but just being in good company is great. But boy, when they start winning some of those, mm-hmm. That's going to turn more heads. The winning last year opened the eyes of a lot of recruits. It opened the eyes of a lot of guys who thought about opportunities because now Indiana's as good an opportunity as, I'm not going to say, oh, I will say, as anywhere. Because if you would have put in Ohio State or someone like that, well, how good is your opportunity? Mm-hmm. I'll ask you. Oh, look, I go no further than Indiana right now. We talked about the revamped offensive line. Part of that, a kid named Zen Mikowski, who went to Floyd Central High School, where I went in Southern Indiana, but who took the Ohio State offer first, but now has moved on.
Right.
And which is fine. You know what? That to me is, you've got a guy who you didn't get as a freshman, but he went over and he's had some great, great training. Obviously, you're getting great coaching there. You're bringing in a valuable piece. Bob Bostad, that is, Bob Bostad is, I've got to be careful because I'm not trying to place, but obviously, you know, the hierarchy of coaches, Kurt Cignetti's at the top. I think right. that probably next is Brian Haynes, mm-hmm. If you want to be honest. And then, of yep. course, right behind him is the offensive coordinator. After that, I think it's Bob Bostad is the most important coach on that staff for a myriad of reasons, not just not the best coach. It's like, put all these things together. I think he is the most important coach, fourth most important coach on this staff.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that assessment and what, you know, he's brought to the equation per se. As the offensive line coach. And, you know, those are key hires. When you talk about hiring a staff, you've got, you know, the wait staff is an important hire in today's game, probably in some respects more so than some positional coaches. And then, of course, your two coordinators. And I think he's hit a home run on all those. I you know, and he kept Bob from the previous staff, which was never really
the only of. The yeah. only right. person kept from the previous staff,
right? And that's not always done in that regard.
But how much does that show Kurt Cignetti's intuition of what he's able to recognize, you know, in players in the talent? Well, he did the same with coaches. Yeah. There were guys that had been here for a long time. There were guys that were here that were probably decent coaches, but he kept one, and it was Bob Bostad. And let me tell you, it is already made a huge difference, and it is going to continue making a difference in Indiana going forward. I think that Bob Bostad is a coach that Indiana can retain because his importance is going to be rewarded as Indiana continues to go forward and successfully, that's going to be rewarded as well. Hey, we've got to take one last break. I almost just ran my mouth right through it. We don't want to do that. But Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle and Coach Griff with us. Back with more right after. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle on this Thursday. I should call it Coyle and Coach on these days. I've already thought about that. What a great ring that has. And I'm sure you'll see Coach a lot more often. As a matter of fact, you'll see him on Monday as he will be picking up the hosting duties. I'll be stopping by, but have an event with Bob Kravitz and his ALS outing. Oh, yeah. So if you want to support Bob, you can certainly do so. And I'm going to try to find a daggone, the format that we use to do the show. They've upgraded things, which is great, but they upgrade them and then you're like fed to the wolves to figure it out. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's nice. Very, very nice.
They change it on you.
Then you try to do stuff on the fly and, not so easy, but looking to see if I could find his flyer that for his ALS, but I'll make sure to have that tomorrow. But if you want to donate to that, as I hope you will, and the Never Lose Hoop outing coming up soon. Yeah. So it's that time of year, people. But all kinds of things coming up. Of course, the TBT starts on Saturday. We'll talk about that tomorrow with Todd Leary and Zach Osterman and Alec Lasley, as they will all be joining us. That begins on Saturday, like I said, Indiana, the Indiana team. And then that continues through the finals on Tuesday. You know, I saw something earlier that I kind of was thinking that the Purdue guys, the men of Mackey or whatever, they're not playing in the TBT this year. And I'm not sure why that is. I wonder if I could find that story again. There we go. Oh, daggummit. I can't get that story open. Damn. But if anybody can figure that out, it's in the Indy Star. Tell me. I would love to. Oh, it's because of my stupid, what do you call that? PVN, private. VPN, a VPN. Oh, yeah.
Virtual private network.
Yeah, got the virtual private network going. So got to put a pause on that thing. But it, I'm amazed on how many things that that blocks, man. but it certainly will. But hopefully that thing will pop open there in a little bit. But, yeah, they're not playing at Mackey for some reason. Not sure why, but Butler has a team. So Indiana goes all these years without having a team, and now Purdue is going to slide backwards. Amazing. We'll find out more about that tomorrow. But may have to get you with us on multiple days whenever you're free. You do a coil and coach kind of a thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Tuesday, Thursday, or whatever. But
it'd be great when the football season starts because there'll be a lot
to talk about. Guess what, my friend? Right around the corner. Yeah. We'll have, speaking of which, thehoosier.com will be out in Las Vegas covering the Big Ten football media days. You can always catch Coach and Hoosier tailgate at thehoosier.com. If you do not have a subscription, you're missing out. It has become the site to providing all of the information that you need in regards to Indiana basketball, football, recruiting, and news. Breaking news, no one has broken more stories than Hoosier.com on three this year. So that's where you go. Man, what's up for the rest of your day, Freddie?
Well, I'm preparing for tonight. Back at it tonight, 7:30, Hoosier tailgate on thehoosier.com. Going to start our season preview, and tonight we're going to talk about the first three non-conference games, go through some statistical analysis and stuff of what we're going to face those 3 weeks. And Colin from thehoosier.com will also be joining me as he completed his seasonal position review and get his take on what he thinks maybe Indiana is missing on that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that. All that and more at thehoosier.com. Appreciate everybody for joining us today. We're back tomorrow to do it again. Coach, thank you, sir. Can't wait, partner, to do this again. We'll see you on Monday. And I will see you all tomorrow. Go out, make it a great one. Have yourselves a good day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the
radio. Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.